The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Hello, beautiful people. It's Renee Blewett, and I am your host for the She Did That podcast. Have you ever wondered how your favorite women founders are building these beautiful brands and legacies? Whether you're an aspiring entrepreneur, already on your journey, or just someone who wants to learn from the best to ever do it, this is the podcast for you. Every week, I'll introduce you to powerhouse entrepreneurs, creatives, and innovators who are carving their own paths with love, resilience, and bold ambitions. Be sure to subscribe now so you don't miss a thing.
Hey guys, welcome to Who's On Content, a show that explores and dissects the influential, behavioral altering power of content through thought-provoking, culturally relevant, and industry-shifting dialogues. I'm your host, of course, EJ, Head of Special Projects at DBA, and I'm so fucking excited for you to join me on this journey of getting to know the innovative leaders and creators in our insanely addictive industry of content marketing. I mean, if content is the only influencer of behavior, we might as well figure out who's on content. Let's get into it. Hey, hey, everyone. We are back with another edition of What's the Deal? And you already know who's in the building. NGP, welcome back. NGP, I really want to know, what's the deal with creators wanting to support small businesses when small businesses aren't able to pay their rates?
Yeah.
This seems like a tough one for you.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
You have a soft spot?
I do have a soft spot. I mean, I try to support small businesses as much as I can. I mean, I can't speak for every individual creator, but I think a lot of times you'll see creators like Michaela. All creators, but Michaela comes to mind because she was talking about this African black soap.
Oh, yeah.
And that was something she organically really liked.
The African black soap ain't nothing to fuck with.
Right. So she promoted it. And from what I'm hearing, they are backlogged. Like, she blew them up or whatever. So I think it comes down to creators really liking the bit. Well, like anything that they do, like genuinely enjoying their product, and then they want to promote it, which we love to see. Yeah. So I think usually they will... They'll figure it out. Like, if it's a brand they really like, they'll figure it out. They want to support small businesses. Because here's the thing, and this is the way I see it. I don't know if you feel the same way. Mm-hmm. Influencers are small businesses.
Exactly.
So they get it.
Right.
And I think they try to help, especially when their friends have, you know, a merch launch or a collab or whatever. I think they try to help each other out. So I don't think they turn their noses up at them. I do think if a small business is going to work with an influencer and they can't pay the rate, then they just have to be a little respectful. Like, you can't ask for the moon, the stars, and the sun. But really, you can you can afford the fog, the clouds, like
a little mist.
Yeah.
So any of the small businesses listening, how can they approach someone like a Michaela or, you know, any talent that they're looking to engage to kind of like boost their credibility or kind of like
you gotta play like Yo Gotti and slide in the DMs. Yeah, I think you should shoot your shot, slide in the DMs, be like, hey.
Or if there's an email.
If there's an email, and be like, hey, I noticed you used this product. My product is very similar in this way. Mm-hmm. We would love to send it to you. I think sending it to them is going to be your best bet. But if you're not paying them, there's no guarantee that an influencer is going to post it.
Yeah.
And if you are going to pay them and it's below their rate, just probably understand like the influencer is really rocking with you.
Right.
So you don't want to ruin that relationship. And hopefully if you do get to a point where you can pay their full rate, then you should do it. You shouldn't just assume you're going to get the same discounted rate every time.
Love that. Love that. Well, that's the deal with supporting small businesses.
Yep.
Hey guys, it is another episode of Who's On Content. And today I'm speaking to a woman that I have gotten to know over the past 3 or 4 years. And she is truly an illuminary. She is a thought leader. She is an expert. But more than anything, she is my sister. And that is Renee Blewett. Renee, welcome to Who's On Content.
Hey, EJ. What an honor to be here.
Ma'am. I mean, we're going to get into all the things. And when I tell you, I am so excited to not just talk about the work that you're doing on behalf of Black female entrepreneurs, But just the legacy that you are leaving for any person of color to have timestamps and stories that let them know what's possible when you dare.
Yes.
And so I always like to start every episode by asking our guests, how do you define content?
You know, considering the title of this show, you would think that I came in here ready with this definition. So content is any medium that we use to express ourselves.
Okay.
So that could be film content.
Come on.
It could be a book. It could be a podcast. It could be, I mean, really fashion too.
Yeah.
Any way that we're using to express ourselves in the world.
I love that. And that's exactly how we define content at DBA. And when I think about your content, right, like the content of Renee Blewett, who is Renee Blewett?
I am still trying to figure her out.
Listen, we are ever evolving.
Like, seriously, I, you know, on the, I guess, the broad definition of who I am a sister.
Yes.
I am a daughter. I am a dog mom.
Yes.
Shout out to Zoe.
Hey, Zoe.
And I am, like all of us, a constant work in progress.
I love that. I think what you do so well is brand storytelling. At the core of who you are, your brand and the brands that you promote, what made you fall in love, or when did you fall in love with like brand storytelling and telling stories of Black female-owned brands?
So when I was a little brown girl in Indiana.
Come on now.
I distinctly remember, you know, when your mom would be on the phone and like you're hanging out around your mom,
yes,
actually
listening.
Being nosy. Collecting information about all her
Air
girlfriends,
hustling. Yes,
and their husbands and their drama. So I would kind of like listen to all of that, just basically minding grown folks' business is yes. what I was doing. And I would repeat those stories. And, you know, I didn't do it in a malicious way, obviously, but I'd be talking to my mom mm-hmm. and like, so I heard that, you know, Ann and such, you know, like, so from a very young age, I have been here for Black women.
Yes.
And just really into what they were experiencing.
Yeah.
And I was an only child for 9 years. So I spent a lot of time around my mother collecting her stories, repeating them back to whoever would listen.
Oh my God.
Getting in trouble for it. So.
But that was a way, that was your connectivity.
Yes, yes, yes. And I've just always had this adoration for Black women and how we move in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So fast forward, you know, when I think about my time in college, taking communications and PR classes, mm-hmm. that, you know, obviously is preparing me for the formality of storytelling.
Right.
And when I got out of college, my first job wasn't in PR,
mm-hmm.
but my first boss told me, you're really good at writing. You're really good at storytelling. You love to produce events. Mm-hmm. Why don't you look into PR? And she kind of like guided
nice.
Me.
Nice. I love teachers that actually not only teach, mm-hmm. but guide.
Yes, yes.
I love that.
So after I got into my first, I had a couple, you know, you have the internships and the jobs
yes.
you don't really love that they won't even get any airtime here. But when I got my very first like official PR job, it was at Burrell, which is still one of the
agency.
Largest,
yes,
Black agencies in the country. And in that environment, I was on the PR team, but mm-hmm. because their bread and butter was advertising,
mm-hmm.
everything we did supported the ad campaigns.
Okay.
And so just to see those stories come to life, the visuals with the ads, and then the way that we supported it through PR and events, like you could not tell me anything. I was not making a dime.
Baby, but living the dream.
Living the dream. Like, mm-hmm. I loved my job. I would spend the night doing work.
Yes.
Like, just so committed.
You have this amazing career in Chicago, New York calls, and honestly, you start telling stories about Black female-owned businesses
mm-hmm.
with your blog and her shoes.
Mm-hmm. And there were some steps in between. I think we all have to go through that stage in our career mm-hmm. where we're doing something we don't enjoy
yes.
to get closer to what we do.
Yes, 1,000%.
So I actually moved to New York to take a position with Lifetime Television in their corporate communications department. Yes, that face. So I knew going into it that uh-huh. I felt like that position was sent to me from God, because I'm like, oh, I am absolutely. In Chicago. Do you know how many publicists there are in New York City? They don't need this little brown girl from the Midwest. Like, you better take this ticket to New York City take this money they're using to relocate you
yes.
and, like, really get your feet wet in that industry. So I did that for a little over a year. It didn't take long for me to be very clear that that was not my ministry, because I wasn't even watching Lifetime, you know?
Right.
So there's that part. But being in New York City
yes.
gave me an up close and personal and really intimate view mm-hmm. of Black women who were building brands and legacies, whose faces were like at the forefront. I didn't see a lot of that in the Midwest at the time
okay.
because, you know, the Midwest is a little more conservative. It's about getting that good job,
mm-hmm.
you know, retiring there, having all the benefits. But in New York, there were so many artists and creatives.
Yes.
And I was just like, oh my God, like, more people need to know about these women's stories.
Mm-hmm.
And these are everyday women, you know? Like, so at the time, and I keep prefacing what I'm saying with at the time, because the landscape has changed so much.
We're
in a time now where entrepreneurship is glorified.
Yes.
It is talked about everywhere. Entrepreneurs and founders are rock stars. Wasn't the case back then. And
right.
if you were getting some shine as an entrepreneur, you were more than likely connected to a celebrity, whether you were married to a celebrity
yeah.
or, you know, you were a celebrity yourself.
Yep.
So my thing was, oh my God, like, are people in other parts of the world seeing this?
Yeah.
And I knew that I wasn't in the Midwest. So I just felt like, I'm gonna start this blog and talk about these women. And, you know, when I look back on the title, it was super cheesy. It was called In Her Shoes. I mean, I couldn't even trademark it because it was the name of a film. But, you know, my little PR creative mind was like, I want to give my readers a chance to walk in the shoes of
Black
women entrepreneurs.
Yes.
So that was where I would say that was the beginning of me creating my own brand
mm-hmm.
and amplifying Black women entrepreneurs.
Right. And so in doing all of that, there was the common theme of funding, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of, and I've heard you say this, a lot of Black women are funding businesses out of needs.
Yes.
You know, and so it's either they need a job, they
yep.
can't find a job with the skills that they have or at the pay mm-hmm. that they deserve.
Mm-hmm.
So they go out and do what Black women do, which is turn water into wine.
Yes.
And so I know you've done extensive work in terms of not even just bridging the gap, but really shifting the narrative around what it means to be a Black female entrepreneur and really a Black entrepreneur, period.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think from the time you started In Her Shoes to She Did That? And we're going to talk about She Did That. But from mm-hmm. the time you started In Her Shoes to filming, producing, creating all the things that gave us the beautiful work of art, which is She Did That, how do you think the narrative has or hasn't changed in terms of Black entrepreneurship?
Oh my gosh, that's a wonderful question. A lot of things have changed. I think that the thing that sticks out to me the most now, the thing that's most important, I think the world is finally realizing that just because a Black woman or a Black person created this mm-hmm. product doesn't mean that it's only... That's
Come
a
on.
Whole different.
Come
so
on.
It doesn't mean that it is like the bargain basement moment, but
yes.
it also doesn't mean that it's just for Black people.
Exactly.
So, and I think that for a long time,
the content
that was the, yes,
that was the content.
That was the content. That was the assumption. Now, let's be clear. There are a lot of brands that are successful that, you know, Black women and Black people in general, we create things to fill a void and to like, create for us what's missing. So if you think about like
yep.
in the beauty industry,
oh, 1,000%.
You know, that's a huge place where we are still creating things that just weren't created for us or
Come
weren't
on.
Created with us in mind.
Dollars left on the table by brands that knew everything.
Everything. I mean, when you think like back in the day before a Fenty, before a lip bar,
yeah.
what limited choices we had when it came to you makeup and lips yeah. and, you know, everybody was wearing the same color.
Look at the photos. Look yes. at the content from like our favorite celebrities like Whitney Houston and Anita Baker and Tina Turner, like all these amazing luminaries. These women would get their photographs taken and their faces would be so white
mm-hmm.
because they had to use whatever was available to them. And I think that is just a timestamp of how far we've come. Because yes. now we see photos and your face match your neck.
Oh, my gosh.
You know what I mean?
And they understand that, you know, not to say that a white makeup artist couldn't service a black woman, but why not hire a black woman?
Right.
You know, have more black women on set and behind the scenes to really amplify our beauty.
That reminds me of Beyonce when she was reviewing show content for some producers and she was like, mm-mm, and I hate that ugly blue light and do not put black girls in blue light.
Yo.
And that's a real thing. Now we are at the table of, she did that.
Yes.
Your film baby. How has that journey been since the first screening? The content of that, how has that changed? How has that fueled what we will talk about next?
Oh my gosh. For one, that, well, this journey, because I'm still on
yeah.
it, it literally feels like it was just a turning point in my career, mm-hmm. in my life. So many women who watched that film, you know, there were tears. There were women
yeah.
saying how much they felt seen.
Yes.
Because even, you know, when that film was released initially in 2018,
mm-hmm.
you weren't hearing our stories as honestly as you're hearing them now.
Right.
I think back then, we still had our capes on and we felt like, as an entrepreneur, all that I need to share is my story of winning.
Right.
And the goal of She Did That was to let people know that if she did that, you can do it too, but also to pull back the curtain
mm-hmm.
and show the real behind entrepreneurship. It's not always the red carpet moments. It's not always, you know, the glamorous images that we see on social. There's some tears. There's some
yeah.
insecurities. There's some days and nights and months and perhaps years when these women were ready to give up. There's imposter syndrome. You know, there's all these things. Then there's the personal lives
right.
of these women that we don't often factor in when we're thinking about someone like a Tanya Rapley who,
yeah.
you know, at once was in an abusive relationship.
Oh,
that
my God.
Led
Every
her,
time she tells that story, I instantly just start crying.
Oh, my God.
Like, I think I've seen She Did That about 5-6 times now.
Mm-hmm.
And every single time, I just start crying.
Yeah. So, you know, that just really speaks volumes to, for women around the world, why we choose entrepreneurship. It's
mm-hmm.
not always because, oh, I want to be a boss and be a boss chick. It's because I need this. For example, a lot of these businesses start as side hustles.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of women are heads of households.
Mm-hmm.
They need to create additional streams of revenue to
yes.
feed their children, to take care of their aging parents, to, you know, whatever, pay off college loans.
Yeah.
And so a lot of these businesses are built out of necessity
mm-hmm.
and not necessarily ego. And that's what I wanted to show, because back when we started filming in 2016, we weren't in this space we're in now where women felt comfortable. Because you see a lot of people now on social, really successful women sharing the days when they're not feeling good about their business.
We've lifted the veil.
Yes,
and
yes.
Would you say that the veil has been lifted because of the Ponderosa? I can't call it a pandemic. The Ponderosa?
Well, yes, the absolutely. And
mm-hmm.
also, I think projects like She Did That and other projects that allowed women to be honest about their
yes.
journeys normalized the hardship and challenges we face as entrepreneurs. So now, because when we started screening it, people would be like, oh my God, you know, who knew that Lisa Price went through that?
Right.
I would have never known that Lovie, you know, was afraid to call herself a writer
mm-hmm.
and who is now
a New York
Times.
Yes.
Two times. So when you hear that women that you look up to
mm-hmm.
have had a lot of the same challenges that you are currently having,
it humanizes them.
Exactly.
You pivoted from the visual storytelling of She Did That, and now you have your podcast, She Did That. And is that a continuation of those stories? essentially?
Yes, it was basically me doing what I just described in the pandemic, trying to redefine community.
Yes, because, redefine community. I love that.
Because prior to, you know, all of that, my community was in all of these cities where we were doing these screenings and just connecting with women in person.
Yep.
And when that got taken away, I went through it. We all did.
Yes.
You know, but I really went through kind of a dark period of like questioning, do you even have a career now? Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Which in hindsight was re-freaking-diculous because, sis, your film was on the largest streaming platform in the world during a time when everyone was at home consuming content.
But was there content that you were consuming that kind of like sowed the seeds of questioning?
Well, hell, if you just watch the news every day, it was doom and gloom.
Yes.
And we did not know when we were going to, quote unquote, get back to normal. So
right, because that was supposed to be for 2 weeks, girl. It was two years
and some change, okay?
And we still kind of in it.
So to not be able to connect with my community in the ways that fed me most, like I got the most. Because it's one thing to get like DMs and people like hitting you up saying how much they're enjoying it on Netflix. That's a different experience. But to go into a city like Atlanta, Chicago, Detroit,
yes,
and see these women react to something you created and have conversations with them following the film to unpack these topics, that fed me in a way that I don't, now I kind of understand why like music artists, like they need to always be on tour because they're like feeding
There's
off of
energy.
That energy.
Yes.
So to abruptly not have that energy, I was going through it and I was just like, oh my God, I have to continue these conversations. What do I do?
Right.
And the podcast was, I mean, it just made sense. You know, it was an extension of the brand. It was the opportunity to talk to women all over the country and really have my finger on the pulse of like, how are we navigating this?
Yeah.
You know, and everyone's story is so different. There were some women who were thriving through the pandemic and some women who were like, I'm going to have to let this go.
Right.
And do something else.
And I think the content of letting go or closing chapters, closing businesses, whatever you want to call it, that is the hardest thing to do. And so you are now evolving this content again, and you just recently announced.
I recently announced She Did That Short Story.
Yes.
Which, to be honest, was also a way to continue telling these stories and redirect them in a way that I felt comfortable with in 2022. I am not the same person I was in 2016.
Talk about it.
When I, you know, just had the audacity as someone who had never produced a film to say, I'm going to do this film.
And you sure did. You was a Virgo
over.
For real.
Oh my gosh. So I'm, you know, clearly still a Virgo, but one that wants to work smarter and not harder.
Yes.
Everyone's bandwidth has changed.
Everyone.
So I love reaching out to someone about something and they're like, oh, I'm taking the month of April off. Or they're not overpacking their schedules the way they used
to.
We aren't. So even factoring that in would have added, you know, a significant amount
of time.
Oh,
that production schedule would have been crazy.
Yeah. So when we started filming, we actually started filming She Did That Short Stories in 2020. Because remember, we kept having those gaps of time where like the numbers were lower and then they were spiking.
Baby.
So I was just trying to like double dutch, get in when I could. Okay, the numbers are lower. Let's shoot down to DC and film Kalila. So we filmed her in October of 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And her emotions were really raw because she was really still in the thick of
She was in the thick
you know,
of it.
Trying to navigate that thing.
It's like that TikTok, into the thick of it.
Oh my God. Yes. And I was intentional about wanting to talk to women in that phase.
Yes.
Because if I'm talking to you even 6 months later and you're reflecting on how crazy October of 2020 was, it doesn't hit the same. But after realizing and being honest with myself that, sis, you don't want to go as hard as you went back in 2016. You're a different person. This is a different world. And what can you do with the content that you've already captured?
Come on.
And I knew that, like, I wanted to do a couple things. I wanted to kind of dig a little deeper into the day-to-day, and she did that. We didn't have a lot of verite, and that's like B-roll. It was mostly like the talking heads, okay. The very like, you know, you're sitting in your chair.
Confessional style, like interview. Yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. I needed to get more
content
footage of like, what does it look like when Kalila is in her shop and they are like pressing these t-shirts?
Yes.
What is it like when Kalila is homeschooling her son?
Because that is visual content that further enriches the audio.
Yes. Yes. It gives more texture to the story and it makes them even more human because it's like, okay, anyone could sound, you know, smart if they're just sitting in a chair, but like, let's catch them like when they're doing what they do. Exactly. And so we got a lot of that content and I said, like, I want to create something that's focusing on one woman per episode.
I love that.
And so that was the birth of She Did That Short Stories. And I was able to produce this in partnership with Chase, Advancing Black Pathways.
Come on.
And Kalila was just so great to work with. We got to talk to her son because that's another thing.
They have such a beautiful relationship.
Beautiful. And you know, you hindsight is 20/20. So She Did That was amazing. But as I, you know, like you have been looking at it over the years, I'm like, we didn't really get to hear the POV of people who are close to these women we're featuring.
Right.
So I got to talk to her son, Caden, like, what does it mean to you for your mother to be an entrepreneur? You know, do you want to be an entrepreneur? So he's in the episode. So
I can't wait. It's just beautiful to have, you know, narrators like yourself of Black experiences and Black experiences that are beautiful, but also Black experiences that are raw and real, because being Black is raw and real.
Raw and real.
And you could just take that and run with it however you will. But the content of being Black and being a Black entrepreneur is like, oh, hustle, hustle, hustle. You know, sleep is for suckers. And like, I'll sleep when I die. And that content has killed a lot of us.
I am so glad that we have shifted our thinking.
Oh my God, can I tell you how light my shoulders feel?
Yes.
And almost how emotional I get when I don't answer emails after 8 o'clock. Because I felt that the content would say that I'm lazy.
Yes.
Or the content would say that, oh, he's not serious about this.
Right.
But we still
not
have that content, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are still entrepreneurs that are like, if you're not up by 4 and then...
They can have that life.
Let's talk about it, because that is also the content of the strong Black woman syndrome.
Oh my God.
That right there is what has held down generations of Black women that have felt like, I have to stay in this marriage. I have to stay at this job. I have to stay. What are you doing to protect your strong Black woman? Because you are. You know, you are shouldering the weight of the world, the criticism of the world, all the criticism of the culture. You know, how do you protect that strong Black woman that is Renee Blewett?
That question is so relevant, because just yesterday I had to protect her. I think I talked to you about how, like, moving to LA, I thought I was going to come here and like live a slower lifestyle. And lo and behold, everyone in New York City is in LA or always coming to visit. And it's just a new city, so there's so much to explore. From the time I moved here, I literally hit the ground running, like doing all the things, going all the places. Yesterday, for the first time in the 6-7 weeks I've been here, I did not do a thing.
Ooh, didn't it feel good?
Oh my God, it felt amazing.
I was on my couch too from like 1 until like 10.
And when I say I didn't do a thing, of course, I was like finding myself busy in the house, but I didn't go anywhere. No one was expecting me anywhere. I was supposed to meet someone for brunch. I decided, no, I want to stay indoors, you know, and just relax. And so those are little things, which are actually big for someone like me who likes to be busy, that I've been doing to protect, you know, protect my... just my nervous system, my peace.
Your sanity.
Yeah.
We've come to the portion of our show where I like to do a little rapid fire.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to ask you a question, 4 questions, and you're going to tell me, like, who's on content. Your favorite form of content, who's on content?
Right now it's podcasts.
Yes. What are you listening to?
Of course, I'm listening to Who's on Content.
Of course. You need a reset. Who's on Content?
You know what? The walks around the new neighborhood, it hits so different. I love Brooklyn. By no means am I comparing, but it's a different experience.
Yes.
And so our walks are longer. We're taking right turns and left turns and like just exploring.
I love
and it. And it feels good. It I feels love really that. Good.
So a walk around the block when you need a reset.
Mm-hmm.
When you need to be inspired, who's on Content?
Black women.
Period.
Period.
Nothing else needed to be said.
All of us.
That's a full statement.
Mm-hmm.
Last but not least, when you need to feel joy, who's on Content?
My niece.
Oh, niecey poo.
She is about to be one. Samara, she is just, I am so in love with that little girl.
I mean, and you are giving her content that will inspire her to dream big.
Yes.
And
yes.
Dream out loud.
Oh my gosh. I can't wait for her to be old enough to watch She Did That in its different forms. Because like going back to social media, one of my concerns is we invest so much time and energy pouring into social media.
Come on, say it.
If it decided to disappear, it's like our whole, like the last 10 years of our lives is there.
Yes.
So the work I'm doing, whether it's through the podcast or the films, is just to say we were here.
We were here.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that Beyonce song. I was here.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes.
Final question. This social world, this metaverse, the NFTs, and the YU3, whatever we calling it. What is the future of our industry?
You know what I hope the future is? Because we've gone so far down this rabbit hole.
We are down the rabbit hole and sinking even further.
I pray that we are going to wake up one day and be like...
And unplug the Wi-Fi.
F-O-H. Like, this is not who I am.
Right.
I don't even know what I'm selling anymore.
Right.
Social media has me chasing a goal that I don't even want. Just
it has a chokehold on our lives.
A serious chokehold on our lives, our relationships.
Yeah.
You know, the way we do business. You know, it's really doing a number on us. Now... It has been a blessing to a lot of people.
Because it has globalized, but also democratized pain and struggle.
Yes.
Everyone struggles.
Everyone.
Everyone has pain.
Every single
and
person.
And so now that allows us, we're hoping, you and I both, that in the future we are a little kinder to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Because we saw that social post that you were going through something. And so rather than just liking and commenting, shoot you a text.
Like, have a real life interaction.
Have a real life interaction with somebody and actually know them on a deeper level and just understand that we're all humans and we are just trying to figure it out.
Yeah. And if it's not a post where it's apparent that that person is going through something, even if it looks like they're amazing, still reach out.
Yes.
Because that those posts and that content are not always a true reflection of what we're going through. Oh, you know?
I love that. And Renee, I will say thank you. As always, you... The content you are leaving in this world for consumption well past our lives is nothing short of amazing. You deserve all the flowers.
Oh, so thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Of course. And thanks for joining us on Who's on Content.
Well, before we close out, I just have to say, and I shared this with you by text, but I'm sharing it with the world. Like being here in LA with you and spending more time.
Yes.
And guys, for anyone listening, this man, speaking of having a chokehold, one thing, like we walk into a room. Now, the room could be an outdoor event. To see how people gravitate towards you and the love and energy that you spread in every conversation, it is just so beautiful.
Thank you.
Like, oh my God, everybody loves EJ. Like people who don't even know you. I love it. I love to see it. And it's the energy is infectious. And I just enjoy kind of being a fly on the wall, watching how you engage with people and how people respond to you.
Oh, I love that. Thank
especially
you.
In this new space, because like you said, you're on your peacock business
yes.
right now.
The feathers are spread.
And people feel it.
Yes.
And they want to be a part of it. So
yeah, and that is my content that I always like to leave people with. Like I always want to leave a space and place. If not the same, a little better, a little brighter.
Yes.
A little bit more peacockish.
Absolutely. Well, you're doing it. You're doing that.
Thank you. I thank you.
Thanks again for listening. Be sure to follow us at The Real DBA and give us a rating and leave us a review. See you next week.